Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
President Trump's approval ratings are dropping. Craig Gilbert gives us the latest. The race against Senator Tammy Baldwin is already heating up. We look at who's hoping to take her on. State taxpayers would need some 25 years to recoup the nearly $3 billion in proposed payments to bring Foxconn to Wisconsin. Is it worth the money and the risk? It's been a year since the unrest in Sherman Park. We look back at the incident and what's changed and what hasn't. All that, plus winners and losers and viewer questions, today on JS on Politics. Welcome to JS on Politics. I'm your host, Mary Spacuzza. I'm joined now by reporter Patrick Marley from our Capitol Bureau, who has the latest on Foxconn. Patrick, what are we hearing now?
Well, we've learned a lot this week. The Fiscal Bureau came out with a memo that says it's going to take 25 years for the state taxpayer to recover the money that they would invest in Foxconn if it operates at full capacity. And we've learned that it's no guarantee in the state Senate that this will pass. It looks like it'll probably get through, but there's going to have to be some changes for that to happen.
And that's because Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said that he just doesn't have the votes right now. Has he said anything else today on this?
Yeah, so Scott Fitzgerald talked to reporters yesterday. He said he didn't have the votes yet. He hadn't done a nose count on it. People had a lot of questions. They were looking at this Legislative Fiscal Bureau memo. They wanted answers. Today he did a couple of interviews on talk radio ahead of a caucus meeting. He did say that he believes it will pass eventually, but that he just hasn't counted the votes on it. He needs more time, and he thinks that they want to make some changes to the bill. The key thing that he wants in this legislative incentive package is that he wants to guarantee that certain numbers of jobs would be created by certain dates. Right now, Foxconn doesn't get paid until it makes investments in the state, doesn't get other payments until it creates a certain number of jobs. But he wants deadlines for jobs to be created.
It's interesting because it seems like there's been criticism from liberals and conservatives on kind of whether government is picking winners and losers with this deal. When is the Assembly going to take it up? Is that happening next week?
Yeah, so the Assembly, it looks like they will have a committee vote on Tuesday, and then on Thursday they will have a floor vote. From then, it's a little unclear what happens. Likely the next step would be for the Joint Finance Committee, the Budget Committee, to hold another public hearing on it, or its first public hearing, but the second public hearing we've seen on the bill. And then that committee would need to vote, and then the Senate would vote. If the Senate passes something different than the Assembly, which appears likely, then it would have to go back to the Assembly for a final vote before going to Walker.
Okay, Patrick, thank you so much for your time. We know you're busy right now with all the Foxconn news, so we appreciate it.
Thanks, Mary.
I spoke earlier with our Washington, D.C. Bureau correspondent, Craig Gilbert, who had an update on some of President Trump's latest polling numbers and some comments he's made about North Korea. Here's what he had to say. I'm joined now by Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief Craig Gilbert. Craig, it seems like there's been a lot of polling on the president lately. What are you hearing and what are you seeing in terms of his numbers?
Well, President Trump started with the worst polling numbers of any modern president at the outset of his presidency, and they've been getting worse since then. A lot of polling in the last week. In most of these polls, his number, his approval rating is in the mid to high 30s, which is not where any president would want it to be. He's at a point now in his polling where if his numbers continue to drop, it's going to reflect as much as anything a loss of support in his Republican base, because he already has virtually no support among Democrats, and his numbers among independents are really bad already. So the key thing to watch going forward, people wonder whether there's a hard floor for his approval rating. In other words, whether it can't get any worse than it is now. It can get worse if he continues to bleed support among self-identified Republican voters. So kind of at a perilous point right now in his presidency when you look at his public image and what that means for his ability to get his agenda passed.
And he's recently made some explosive comments about North Korea. What is the polling showing us about how those kind of that kind of rhetoric affects his approval ratings?
Well, a couple things. One, you know, I think the fact that he's operating from a position of political weakness probably takes something away from that rhetoric, because some people will perceive him as kind of saber rattling out of a position of weakness, maybe in a way to kind of pump up his numbers. I think it undermines the force behind that rhetoric. But also, you know, we've seen in the polls that his numbers on foreign policy are not very good. And we've also seen a lot of questions among voters about his judgment and temperament. So his remarks were so strong and harsh that it's possible that they could, that he's vulnerable on both fronts, and that those numbers could exacerbate his public image, both in terms of conducting foreign policy and an overall leadership style.
We got news late last week that President Trump had made an appointment picking a Milwaukee attorney for the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. It seems like there's been a lot of drama around that vacancy. What's been going on there?
Yeah, so this is there's a lot of inside baseball involved in this, but basically this is the oldest or longest vacancy in the federal appellate courts. It goes back to 2010. These are the short of the Supreme Court. These are the most important seats in the federal judiciary. And so they're really important to people on the left and people on the right. But basically, for the last 6 years of the Obama presidency, Republicans essentially blocked him from filling this vacancy. Ron Johnson had objections to his first nominee. Then he negotiated a deal with Tammy Baldwin, the Democratic senator, over the changes to Wisconsin's longstanding nominating commission. Then a new set of names came after that, and the Republicans, once President Obama finally made a nomination, refused to act on it in the last year of his presidency. So now, after all that time, it's the Republicans under President Trump who, in theory, get to fill this seat. But in order to fill it, they may have to kind of, you know, go against some of the rules that they operated by when they were making it difficult for President Obama to fill this seat. Essentially, the new nominee didn't get the votes from the nominating commission that the charter of the nominating commission calls for. He got 4 votes out of 6 instead of 5. And this is also going to be a test of whether the Senate, which has a longstanding practice of not approving judicial nominees without the support of both home state senators, whatever party, if Tammy Baldwin, which is a real possibility, opposes this nomination, she's been very critical of it, then the Senate would have to kind of end their longstanding practice of essentially giving home state senators veto power if they wanted to go ahead and confirm this nomination and fill the vacancy.
Okay. Thanks, Craig. Talk to you soon.
All right.
I'm joined now by columnist Dan Weiss and reporter Bill Glauber. The next Senate race in Wisconsin is...
Didn't we just have one?
Yeah, we just had one. It's more than a year away. It already seems to be heating up of people who want to take on Tammy Baldwin.
Yep.
Who's going to run?
Okay,
and
so we've got Tammy
White?
Baldwin in the race. We got Marine veteran and Delafield businessman Kevin Nicholson in the race. Leah Vukmir, who has been running all over state fair this week.
She's going to run.
She looks like she's going to run. And then we're waiting for Eric Hovde, the Madison businessman who ran second to Tommy Thompson. But the race is already up and running.
Well, Hovde has said he's going to wait until September or so. Actually, until his daughter heads off to college before making some sort of announcement. But it could be a really good race with the three of them. Nicholson, who's getting funding from the Uline family already. And
John Bolton today said that his PAC gave him $10,000, so he earned the endorsement of the former UN
So are we
ambassador.
Officially in just permanent campaign season
yes,
at this
point?
Yes,
we are officially okay. in permanent
well,
campaign season.
I remember
season.
Back with the Johnson-Feingold race, that talking to other reporters. Some reporters say, I'm not going to write about it until the year that the election is occurring. But, you know, some of the most important stories in that race occurred in the year before or very early on, and there's already a lot of activity in this race.
And so this race, Republicans are zeroing in on Baldwin win over the issue of Toma VA. What did she and her staff know? When did they know it? Was a IG's report buried? That's what the Republicans claim. Mm-hmm. Baldwin, in turn, had sanctioned some members of her staff who were not doing their job.
Baldwin knows that she's got a problem there because she... With the Toma VA, there was this opioid crisis where the doctors were giving out too many pills and stuff. And there was, as you were saying, a report that indicated this. And her staff had the report. We know for a fact that her staff did not release the report and actually told a whistleblower, don't go to the press. So she knows she's got a problem there. She's responded very strongly, pushing legislation on those issues. But
legislation named after the young man who died of mixed-use toxicity, Jason Sandoval.
Didn't this come up in the Johnson race as well?
This came up in the Johnson race. Also, what did Johnson know? What did former Senator Russ Feingold know as early as 2009? This is an issue that will not go away.
It was like a wash in that race, though. But this race, only Baldwin has the issue before her, and she, by firing a staffer, demoting a staffer, cutting the pay of a staffer, has acknowledged that her staff screwed up on this.
Okay. And Nicholson has an interesting background. Wasn't he a Democrat at one point?
Yeah, he's a former college Democrat turned Republican. Democrats today are expected to attack Nicholson for his evolving views on abortion. He once came out for a woman's right to choose while with the college Democrats.
Even gave a talk at the...
at the National Convention in 2000. Now he is, opposed to abortion. And so it's an issue that... What the Democrats are doing by bringing this issue up is they're trying to drive a wedge with Nicholson, with Republican voters. He still has to get past the Republican primary. So what's going on right now with Republicans attacking Toma, with Democrats aiming fire at Nicholson, is they're each trying to soften up the other one.
There's also this with the narrative that Nicholson's laid out, how he grew up as a Democrat, was very prominent in the Democratic Party, but then switched his views as he got more involved in the military, had a family and that sort of stuff. But what's still not clear is when that transition exactly happened, because as late as 2007, he's registering as a Democrat. So did he actually vote in the presidential race that time? He says he voted in the general election. We don't know exactly if he voted in the primary. So I think it's also trying to highlight that yes, he has this strong background, and when exactly did he decide to become a Republican? And is this a sincere thing, or is he just an opportunist?
Right.
And this is and what this points to is Nicholson appears to be a very formidable candidate. But very few people know much about him.
He's got a great resume.
He has to introduce himself to the voters. Democrats are trying to introduce him, trying to do that.
Let us do that for you.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
And the last election with Johnson and Feingold, Baldwin's numbers look very much like Ron Johnson's numbers. There's still a lot of people who haven't formed opinions about her. And so this is a case of not just where the Democrats are trying to introduce you to Nicholson. It's Republicans trying very early on to define who Tammy Baldwin is.
And then obviously President Trump's approval ratings at the time will probably come into play as well, because Republicans might have a president with low approval ratings.
Remember, Ron Johnson ran well ahead of Donald Trump here in beating Russ Feingold. So,
but he did benefit from the wave.
He benefited from the wave outstate, and then what happened in around the Milwaukee area was that Trump benefited from the Johnson wave in the Milwaukee area. So, Waukesha. So it's interesting. I'm sure voters are screaming that, why is this happening now? But it is happening.
Well,
now.
We will have plenty of time to talk about it over the next year, more than a year.
15 months. Not that we're counting.
14 months, 11 days, and no, I don't know.
Well, we won't be getting election night pizza anytime soon. But thank you, guys. I spoke earlier with columnist James Causey and reporter Ashley Luthern about the year anniversary of the Sherman Park unrest. Here's what they had to say about what's changed and what hasn't in that community. Thank you. I'm joined now by columnist James Causey and reporter Ashley Luthern. Both of them have been doing some work looking at the year anniversary of the violent unrest in Sherman Park from last August. Ashley, what are you hearing from people as they look back at the last year?
I think a lot of people are taking stock of investments that were promised and some that did come through in the community, whether it's relating to housing or youth development. But I think there's still a strong concern that not enough has been done, and that just because people are being quiet and aren't necessarily protesting, there's still a lot of movement and a lot of people trying to bring about positive change in their neighborhood.
And James, what are you seeing in terms of the changes or lack thereof, and what's not changed, what stayed the same?
Well, if you look at Sherman Park today and you look at it before the unrest happened, not a whole lot has changed. I mean, and this is bigger than a Sherman Park issue. This is a Milwaukee issue, and it's an issue on the haves and have-nots. And I hate to break it down like that, but that's really what it is. We still have high unemployment with men of color, both black and Hispanic. We still have a lot of young people with not having a lot of positive outlets. And, you know, honestly, it's just there's this huge gap that still exists. Yeah, some money was funded in to address some of these things. They tore down some houses that should have been torn down. But honestly, there's still so much to be done, and I think that a lot of people have taken their eyes off of it. And I'm glad that we're revisiting this a year later, but there's still a lot to be done.
Have either of you been disappointed in the lack of change over the last year, or surprised by it?
Well, I think when you take a step back and look at the other anniversary that we're marking this this month, the anniversary of the open housing marches and the riot that immediately preceded them, you really get the sense that these same conversations and these same issues have been going on unaddressed and unabated for decades. And maybe we've been able to make a little bit of headway in some areas, and there are obviously people on the ground doing work every single day to make the community better. But there are these entrenched bigger issues that need to be addressed, and we haven't figured out a way to do that effectively.
And that's the 50-year anniversary of the open housing marches in Milwaukee. And both of you have been talking to some of the original marchers. Has anything struck you about what you heard from young people in Sherman Park today versus the marchers 50 years ago?
Well, honestly, I mean, some of the marchers that we both talked to, them, they still said exactly what Ashley said, that things are still the same. And the change has been so slow. And they're wondering, you know, where's the outrage with this? And I'm wondering if the leaders here have the will or a way to try to change things. I have very little confidence in them changing what's going on right now. So if it wasn't for a lot of the nonprofits, and I have to give them a lot of applause, if it wasn't for the nonprofits and the people working at the grassroots level, it would be really, really bad. But Ashley pointed out a young man who's, you know, giving out free food. There's a lot of other organizations working with young people, but that's just not enough. And I don't know, until we start really addressing the jobs issue, livable wage jobs, this will continue. And another thing, you know, we still have this part of Century City that's still vacant, and that has to be addressed, because you can't have this great facility all cleaned up where we invested millions of dollars and there's still no jobs there.
Okay, well, thank you both for your time. We'll look forward to more of your coverage in the coming days and weeks.
Thanks
a lot. We're back for Winners and Losers. Bice, who are your winners for the week?
Dana Walks announced this week that he's running for governor, and it looks more and more like we're going to have a competitive Democratic field. So that's my winner, is the Democratic field. These are not household names. Andy Gronick's in, and now Walks, and it looks like Flynn is going to be in. Evers is probably going to win. So even though right now most people don't know any of these people, it does look like there will be two really competitive races in Wisconsin, the Democratic race for governor and the Republican race for U.S. Senate.
And Vinehout is thinking about it, presumably?
Vinehout is thinking about it. In fact, yesterday spent time at the Capitol shooting footage, which led a lot of people to say that she's probably going to announce soon that she's in.
Okay. What about your loser?
My loser is Senator Johnson, who in a radio interview said that maybe John McCain voted against the repeal and replace of Obamacare because of his brain cancer. I then sort of waffled on the issue and has now walked it back. But that's just, you know, it's It's one thing with Ron Johnson. You know what you're going to get with him. He's going to speak his mind. The only thing is sometimes he says stuff that he probably shouldn't say.
He kind of said, like, between his condition and the late hour that maybe he was confused.
And at 10:30 he thought he was going to vote for it, but by the time it got to be 1:30 that he was not voting for it. It's just not a good thing to speculate about other people's medical conditions and how it affects how they're voting
on
a particular
bill. Their cognitive abilities.
Yeah, and I mean, it was pretty clear that McCain had a position, and Mike Pence left, in fact, so most of people took that as a signal of how McCain was going to vote, but apparently Ron Johnson didn't get that memo.
Got it. Okay. What about you? Who's your loser for the week?
Oh, boy. Former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort. We found out this week that one of his homes was raided by federal authorities. It came right after he testified to a congressional committee. Boy, you don't want to be in the crosshairs of federal investigators, and it's really, that's pretty serious.
And it seems like part of it is questions about what he was doing, what kind of work he was doing, and payments he was getting from foreign governments like Ukraine and things like that.
He has a history of working with foreign governments who most people wouldn't work with. So it's not a good sign. Plus, another not good sign for him is the National Enquirer, basically a Trump mouthpiece, went after him with a quote-unquote scandal story. So things are heating up on that front of the Russian collusion scandal.
And behind the scenes, you have the story about Mike Pence might be gearing up for his own presidential race in 2020.
Hiring a new chief of staff and shifting things a bit in his office.
And having his own pack.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy times, really. I mean, we've never, again, with the Trump presidency and the era we're in, we've never seen this before
Iran-Contra was a second-term thing. The Monica Lewinsky situation, another second-term thing.
Not a first 200-day thing.
it's typical for the vice president to think about running for president, but not quite so early, maybe.
he denied it, vehemently denied it, called it fake news.
Right.
I think the denial was really meant for one person. That would be the president of the United States.
Got it. What about your winner?
Winner, Wisconsin State Fair. It's comes about every year, annual rite of summer. Same fried food, same entertainment, same livestock.
Cream puffs.
And cream puffs. Great. People love it.
New milk.
New milk. it just keeps getting not bigger and bigger, but it just remains huge. And it's one of those things I think a lot of people may take for granted. They may poo-poo the event, but you pull a million people into an event over 11, 12 days. It's worth noting.
Okay. We got a lot of viewer questions, so I'm going to throw you guys into the mix with these. One from Marlene that I think Bill Glauber might be the most qualified to answer.
Yes.
Someone who maybe had this experience at one point. But she asked, if a person lives in Illinois and works in Wisconsin, do they pay any tax to the state of Wisconsin? I've been reading all your articles and nothing is mentioned of this. I'm thinking that they might be referring to if Foxconn opens and maybe Illinois folks want to work there. How does that work?
Yeah, what happens is there's a reciprocal tax agreement, meaning you pay where you live, not where you work. So for several years, I lived down in Illinois, worked in Wisconsin, and I paid my state income tax in Illinois. You move up to Wisconsin, then you pay it here.
So it's interesting. I had a source tell me over the weekend that Foxconn officials, a group of Foxconn officials, they weren't looking in Illinois for residences. They were looking for retail and residences in Milwaukee and in Madison, spent a fair amount of time in Madison. So it looks like the executives are looking at being Wisconsin residents, or at least looking for now at places here.
Well, it's interesting because in that Illinois-Wisconsin thing, the Ulines who own Uline, they live in Lake Forest, Illinois,
try to put in office are almost all Wisconsin.
But they are involved in Illinois politics, too.
And they really disliked it when the Crane Chicago Business called him the Koch brother, the third Koch brother in Illinois. But the amount of money they put into races here is just incredible.
It's phenomenal. It is phenomenal. That,
well, right now,
they would pay taxes in both places, right, because they might be residents, but then their company is based here?
Pleasant Prairie, yeah.
Yeah, their company's in Pleasant Prairie, and they themselves reside in Illinois. I don't know their tax situation, right, but I'm just saying they live in Illinois, and they have their principal business.
Well, right now, in talking about the Senate race that we were mentioning earlier, it comes down not so much to the candidates, so we know where Dick Uline is on this race. He's supporting Nicholson. The other major contributor in the state right now is Diane Hendrickson. And the question is, who is she going to support? Will she support Nicholson? Or if she supports a Vukmir, then you have a very competitive race. If Eric Hubney
deep
gets
pockets
in,
on both sides.
And then Eric Hubney is a multimillionaire himself. So it could be a very expensive race. And, you know, I mean, those are the two people you need to watch, the two contributors you have to watch in major races in the state.
So we could have a lot of TV ads.
But back to the tax question, yes, if you're working for Foxconn and you, if there is a Foxconn and you live in Illinois, you're paying taxes in Illinois.
Okay.
You said if there's a Foxconn.
If there is a Foxconn.
Well, why do you think there, well, maybe are there questions on Foxconn?
There are some questions.
Okay,
so here's one is Make America Straight Again. It will take a taxpayer 25 years to break even for the Foxconn investment.
What assuming is, everything goes right.
Right. Assuming it passes and they build the factory, build their facilities. What is the likelihood of the factory being around for 25 years? And then they go on to say it seems like a bad investment with costs that would cost Wisconsin money instead of making Wisconsin money.
I think the answer is right now nobody knows. And so that's part of the uncertainty that's going on. It's complicated by the fact that the Foxconn has made deals or promises in the past that they haven't delivered on, particularly in Pennsylvania and India and a couple of other places. But you're putting a lot of trust and a lot of money into this. This is an easy thing right now for Scott Walker to do because it won't be resolved by the next election. And it looks like he's carrying through on his initial promise, which is to create jobs. But I think we right now have no idea if this is going to happen or not. And the amount of money is pretty staggering.
I mean, we don't know. The Senate is obviously, you heard Patrick Marley earlier saying, yeah, the Senate says they'll probably get this done. But there's going to have to be some more compromises made. There's a short timeline. They want this deal done with the state by September 30th. But even after that deal is done, I mean, anything could happen. There could be an economic crash again, which could you know, push things back. So until the factory is built up and running, I would say you have to wait and see.
Okay.
I mean, there is a contingent on the Republican side, and you see that with Americans for Prosperity, who oppose corporate welfare deals like this, who oppose deals like the Bucks Arena.
Right.
And there were even some conservatives who opposed Miller Park. I mean, why it was so close, because, many Republicans are highly critical of traditional welfare, yet, like Scott Walker in this case, not so upset about giving welfare to businesses if they come to Wisconsin.
We've got one about the governor's race. Bobby asks, Dana Walks is a trial lawyer. This is just great if you want to keep the insurance rates high. Goes on from there. Is this what everybody wants? So I think the question, there's not really so much of a question, but presumably
like
it's safe to say. Right.
It's
safe to say then that his job will come into play in the governor's race.
It's already come into play. The Republicans were pointing out that he pushed a bill that would benefit his group, but you knew that with him. It's not going to be a surprise. Just like it wasn't a surprise with Governor Doyle. Governor Doyle, who is himself an attorney, very close to trial attorneys, and trial attorneys gave lots of money. I wrote stories about how much money they gave him, and then he ended up deals in state government that benefited them. That was all out there, and it wouldn't be surprising if Dana Walks.
And surely the Walks campaign will put forth clients who were hurt in some way by corporations or, you know, some big type of institution, and that he helped them out. So I think it could play both ways in this race.
And you know, I think that sort of argument about him is going to be very appealing to the Republican base. Obviously, it wasn't an obstacle for Governor Doyle. So I think the attacks on him will have to. They'll focus on that, but I think there'll have to be more than just that.
Just that he's a trial lawyer,
right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that's sufficient to knock some out of the race. But I mean, his biggest issue is he has no name ID right now. So actually, stories about his being a trial attorney would help him out because publicity would be a good thing for him.
Okay. So we've got one about drug testing and whether...
Is this an essay or a question?
More of an essay, but basically I think we
should ask these people to be editorial writers.
Yes. I think we can probably skip that one. Would you want to work next to someone that is high? you work in a newsroom, so there are all kinds of personalities. Anyway,
well, I worked in an old-time newsroom too, back in the 1970s.
But they were high.
Well, people actually were probably drunk.
They were drunk,
right?
Back in the day. You know, there's drug testing for all sorts of businesses that you apply for. And, I mean, that's just that's a fact of modern American life. But there is a problem with people on drugs at work in this society in Wisconsin. And
there's been heroin overdoses
yeah,
at
and,
work.
And so, you know, the issue of drugs in the workplace is a valid issue in terms of, you know, how do you combat it, how do you deal with it, and how do you help people, you know, beat that illness?
You know, it's interesting to me how Republicans are, that there's some change on the drug issues because of the opioid crisis.
And it's hitting suburban America, too, which is I think, shifting from seeing people as addicts.
Yet the president rejected that sort of argument to see it as primarily a health issue and is framing it as primarily a crime issue. And the governor is still talking about it in terms of whether this is illegal or illegal or whatever. But, you know, there's a shift within the Republican Party because the opioid crisis has affected so many people outside of just
family members.
Right, outside of the central city. As long as it's crack cocaine and it's something that not a lot of politicians' families are affected by, you can beat up on that a little bit more.
Okay, well, I think we're out of time for this week, but thank you guys so much, and thanks for joining us. See you next week.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.